Thank you, Professor Inbal. Can you all hear me in this? What? A little louder. Maybe that's better. Is that better? Okay. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about organized crime and the social order. But before I begin, I'd like to mention on the program, it says that I'm affiliated with the Hoover Institution. And that isn't correct. It's my husband who's affiliated with the Hoover Institution. I consider this not male chauvinism, but just enthusiasm for the Hoover Institution. So I'm right now still working on my PhD dissertation, which is an economic analysis of the activities of one organized criminal group in one city. And as Professor Inbal mentioned, I also spent about a year recently working for an agency in the Department of Justice managing its research program on organized crime. While I was working in Washington, I got acquainted with quite a few people who are in the business of fighting organized crime. And it is from the perspective of the public policy problems that organized crime presents that I would like to speak today. I think that's most in keeping with the title of this session, Crime, Justice, and the Social Order. The fundamental characteristic of organized criminal activity is the supplying of illegal goods and services to voluntary consumers, especially those illegal goods and services over which monopolistic control can be established through the use of violence or collusion with the police. Today, these goods and services include gambling, narcotics, and loan sharking. Once an organized criminal group is established to supply an illegal market, it may be in a position to perform certain other types of criminal operations, such as hijacking, fencing, and the criminal monopolization of legitimate industries, and especially the corruption of public officials. The basis of organized crime is voluntary but illegal trade. In other words, victimless crimes where there is consent on both sides, at least initially. Not all trade in illegal goods and services is handled by the large organizations that we traditionally recognize as organized criminal groups, such as the mafia. Some victimless crimes, such as prostitution, illegal abortion, and the sale of marijuana, are at least today the province of smaller groups or even individuals. Nevertheless, some of the policy problems these criminal activities present are similar to those presented by organized crime because they too arise from the prohibition of free trade in a good or service. Most of the victimless crimes have been made crimes because of moral objections to these activities and the belief that they are harmful to the individual and perhaps to other people as well. The criminalization of these activities is directed toward reducing the number of customers or the frequency of use, and perhaps more especially toward controlling excessive use, drug addiction, compulsive gambling, and so forth. In other areas, the social order that is part of the environment in which organized crime exists is changing rapidly today. A committee of the American Bar Association has estimated that as much as one half of the holdups, burglaries, muggings, and thefts in the nation's 34 major urban centers are committed by heroin addicts, and is recommending that a medical approach, including the possible use of heroin itself, be adopted. The purpose of this approach would be not only to rehabilitate addicts, but also to take addicts off the streets and reduce the demand for black market heroin and related crime. Marijuana shows signs of becoming our second national drug, and the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse has called for decriminalization of the drug to the extent that personal possession and use would no longer be a crime. In another area, gambling of various forms, off-track betting and state-operated lotteries, for example, has been legalized in states other than Nevada, our national gambling grounds. Legislation to legalize gambling is under consideration in other states for the primary purpose of raising revenue, but also for the purpose of driving organized crime out of the market through competition. And this is explicit in the legislation of the Off-Track Betting Corporation in New York State. Many states have liberalized their abortion laws. The legalization of the victimless crimes is an issue on which people hold sharply different views. One reason for differences of opinion is a difference in basic philosophical or moral convictions. when basic principles support the continued criminalization of crimes such as prostitution, gambling, and the use of certain drugs, two things are necessary: the conviction that these activities are fundamentally immoral or evil, and the assumption that they should therefore be prohibited on the grounds that our laws should reflect our moral convictions. When basic principles support the legalization of the victimless crimes, the position is usually based on the conviction that every individual has the right to do as he pleases, as long as he harms no one else. This view challenges the legitimacy of legislation prohibiting the voluntary exchange of goods and services, even when there is potential abuse, for example, drug abuse, that could result in harm to others. In most cases, however, debates on changes in public policy proceed on much more utilitarian grounds, the costs and benefits of pursuing one policy rather than another. Even though this approach is empirically oriented, it still requires value judgments about what states of the world we prefer. We must still decide what it is we are trying to accomplish and whether our goals will be better served by criminalization or legalization of one form or another. As Stanford Law Professor John Kaplan puts it in his book on marijuana, a law is in essence society's purchase of a package of social effects. One of the difficulties in developing a cost-benefit analysis of alternative policies, such as legalization, is that our information is very poor. In this area, a major source of information is the intelligence gathered by law enforcement agencies, and this intelligence is almost entirely directed toward the purpose of prosecution and conviction. Thus, we do not know how many people gamble, how much they spend on this activity, or what the incidence of compulsive gambling is. Nor are we really certain about the relationship between conditions in heroin markets and the incidence of addict-related crime. In some areas, such as the effects on the individual of the use of marijuana, our information is improving. But in many cases, our basic information is so poor that we must necessarily arrive at some conclusions about the facts of the matter on the basis of the most meager evidence or rule of thumb estimates. Nevertheless, it is probably true, as the opponents of legalization argue, that the quantity of goods and services sold would increase if they were legalized. Thus, we would have more gambling, more prostitution, more extensive use of drugs if these goods and services were not prohibited. This is clearly a cost of legalization, unless we take the position that people should be allowed to spend their money as they wish, even if they make decisions that others do not think are in their best interest. In addition to more extensive use, the result may also be more extensive abuse, drug addiction as well as drug use, compulsive gambling, as well as gambling for entertainment, and so forth. It is not certain, however, that legalization would increase excessive use or abuse. In comparison to the so-called benefits of criminalization, under which the total quantity of an illegal good or service is reduced somewhat and abuse is possibly but not necessarily reduced, the costs of criminalization are very high. A major cost is the resulting inability to ensure that the product or service meets the kinds of standards that we demand of legal goods and services. Abortions performed illegally are more likely to kill than abortions performed legally. Drugs purchased illegally will often be of unknown purity and concentration. The Los Angeles Free Press carries, as a regular feature, an extensive survey of illegal drugs being sold in the area. And according to recent issues, in the vast majority of cases, the drug the purchaser actually received was not the drug he thought he was buying. It is also difficult, if not impossible, to protect customers in the illegal markets from force and fraud, nor are the services of government in adjudicating contractual disputes available to businessmen or consumers in these markets, a situation that may be responsible for a great deal of the violence associated with organized crime. Thus, the customer of the loan shark has a great deal less legal protection than he would have if he were to borrow from a legitimate source, even if he had to pay the same rate of interest. The criminalization of heroin and other drugs, in combination with efforts to enforce the law, results in prices for this product high enough so that crime rates are increased. The better in the numbers racket has no legal recourse if he is not paid when he wins or if he feels he is being cheated in a fixed game. In summary, criminalization appears to be a generally ineffective way to ensure quality, honesty, and freedom from force and fraud. Criminalization also places a considerable burden on our criminal justice system. Finally, one of the major benefits of legalization could be the elimination of highly organized criminal groups and the corruption and violence that go with such organizations. Attempts to enforce the victimless crimes place law enforcement officials and other people within the criminal justice system in positions where they are likely to be offered bribes for non-performance of their duties. The victimless crimes, especially gambling, but also narcotics, are probably a major source of official corruption within the criminal justice system. This corruption often extends to other elected and appointed officials and is perhaps one of the most serious consequences of the existence of large-scale organized criminal groups. Legalization can, of course, mean many things. In its ideal form, it should mean simply free trade. But the legalization schemes presented for actual consideration usually retain a considerable measure of regulatory control and place a variety of restrictions on the exchange of the good or service in terms of location of sale, time of sale, price, permissible purchasers, availability of credit, and so forth. Often licenses are required to enter a legalized business such as gambling, and good character is required as a condition of obtaining a license. These efforts at control often embody what many people consider socially desirable objectives. But the problem with such attempts at control is that if the legislation is too restrictive, the product or service will continue to be widely provided illegally with all the costs that go with the exchange of goods and services outside illegal markets. Eventually, through gradual changes in public opinion and the working out of those changes through the political process, many of our laws will be changed. In the interim, an important aspect of our public policy with regard to organized crime will concern the discretionary enforcement or non-enforcement of existing legislation. In the last few years, with the Safe Streets and Crime Control Act of 1968 permitting court-approved electronic surveillance, and with the Organized Crime Control Act of 1970, we have gone as far as we probably want to go with legislation to give law enforcement the tools it needs to fight organized crime and official corruption. Many states have passed similar legislation. In any case, federal law exists as an available model for state adoption. We have also funded organized crime control efforts and drug control efforts to the greatest extent in history. The Department of Justice has more attorneys in the organized crime and racketeering section than it has ever had and is returning record numbers of indictments and convictions. Increased funds, some from the federal government, are also going to fight organized crime on the state level, and in many states, new intelligence gathering and prosecuting units have been established. However, the new laws and the increased funding are only means to achieve goals, as Kaplan puts it, to achieve a package of social effects. And it is in the area of establishing goals that our law enforcement policy with regard to organized crime has been, I think, least effective. In most cases, federal law enforcement has followed a strategy of attrition, the attempt to identify, prosecute, and convict persons known to be engaged in organized crime, with no specific goals in mind in terms of the state of the world that is to be achieved through these efforts. In the last few years, the Department of Justice has taken a more clearly defined strategic approach. It has focused specifically on gambling for the purpose of reducing the volume of funds going to organized crime. It has also focused on the uses of funds gained through criminal enterprise to counteract further investment for illegal purposes. And it has given greater attention than ever before under legislation the administration requested and obtained to fighting corruption among public officials and thus maintaining the integrity of government. The data are insufficient to say for certain whether this strategy has been effective, but it is unquestionably an improvement over a headhunting approach designed solely to maximize the number of indictments and convictions. In my experience, law enforcement officials seem to find it very difficult to consider their role from the viewpoint of the entire system their activities influence. It is much more common for them to take a narrower view and consider their role simply as enforcement of the law rather than the enforcement of the law for the purpose of achieving certain consequences or conditions considered desirable. Prosecutions of organized criminal figures may not reduce the amount of gambling, loan sharking, or use of drugs, Even more important, it may fail to reduce and may even increase the volume of official corruption. In certain illegal markets, enforcement of the law may eliminate competition and result in the monopolization of the market by the remaining criminal firms. Alternatively, the result of law enforcement might be to break up a cartel, a dominant firm, or a monopoly. On the basis of the most casual empiricism, it seems that the importing and wholesaling of heroin is more competitive and less tightly controlled than it used to be. Law enforcement officials have remarked in recent years that seizures of heroin had less influence in raising market prices than they did in earlier years. Still more recently, however, the massive seizures of heroin, in combination with the New York dock strikes and the Knapp Commission hearings in New York City, are supposed to have increased the price of heroin, bringing with it increased muggings and burglaries as addicts attempt to raise the money for the higher-priced drug. Operation Intercept has been credited with increasing the price of marijuana enough so that heroin became competitive with it and was purchased instead. In all these cases, law enforcement has undesirable consequences that may well negate its desirable consequences. As an example of the difficulty law enforcement agencies seem to experience in accepting the broad consequences of their activities, last year, the Office of Management and Budget worked on what they called a performance management system for the federal government's narcotics programs. They included in the system several different measures of effectiveness of the programs, such as the amount seized and changes in prices. But they did not, at least in their preliminary planning, intend to include any measure of addict-related crime. The reasons were that their role was to reduce drug abuse and that the crimes addicts commit in efforts to support their habits are primarily local problems, not federal problems. Of course, the federal government has no jurisdiction in the vast majority of addict crimes, but addict-related crime is one of the most severe consequences of drug addiction and is a major reason for the volume of federal funds that are being devoted to fighting this problem. And law enforcement policies and strategies clearly have some influence on the incidence of addict crime. Nevertheless, no studies were underway to quantify addict-related crime or determine what influence alternative law enforcement policies would have on the incidence or seriousness of such crimes. I have discussed today public policy with regard to organized crime from two points of view, that of legalization and that of law enforcement strategy. In both areas, there is a need to determine what we want to achieve, to establish our goals, and also to obtain better information on current conditions and the consequences of alternative approaches. I touched only briefly on the question of how basic principles may often, and perhaps should, influence our position on public policy with regard to the victimless crimes. In concluding, I would like to return to that issue and quote Dr. Thomas Zaz of the New York State University Upstate Medical Center, who wrote recently, "Sooner or later, we shall have to confront the basic moral and political issues underlying the problem of addiction. In a conflict between the individual and the state, where should the former's autonomy and the latter's right to intervene begin? As American citizens, do we and should we have the right to take narcotics and other drugs? Further, if we take drugs and conduct ourselves as law-abiding citizens, do we or should we have the right to remain unmolested by the government?" I agree with Dr. Zaz that these are basic issues we will have to confront, not only with respect to narcotics and other drugs, but also with respect to gambling, prostitution, loan sharking, and any of the various other currently or potentially illegal goods and services. Thank you.
For those of you who came in late, that was Mrs. Annalise Anderson.